Hello, everybody. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion with our subject on matter today. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent in Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And thank you for joining us. And we'll begin today with the morning prayer.
Yes, I have two prayers this morning, very simple, short, given by Mrs. Eddy. On page 63 of the Blue Book. The first one is prayer for oneself. I am the child of God. His care and love surround me. Animal magnetism cannot reach me to make me fear or be afraid. The Christian Scientist prayer that says, there is no matter and no mortal mind. God is all in all. All is harmony, health, holiness. This is the prayer unceasing to be used on all occasions and at all times. It lays the axe at the root of unreality, materiality, that forbidden tree, and cuts it down. Preserve a sacred silence on this subject of prayer. Mary Baker Eddy.
Thank you very much. Okay, the watching point, Karen.
Watch number 32. Watch lest in your denial of the existence of matter, you accept the impression that you are denying something that exists externally to you. The term matter covers not what you see, but the way you see it. In denying matter, you are really denying the way mortal mind sees the true heaven and earth that already exist here and now in all their perfection. You will surely see this perfection the moment your dull eyes are opened, the moment you rise out of the mesmerism of mortal belief. A picture of great beauty may appear a daub to an unenlightened novice. Once the veil of ignorance is lifted, however, by study and practice, the beauty of the picture is appreciated. God, as the great master painter, created the universe in all its perfection. Mortals fail to see it only because of their standpoint of ignorance and materiality. All things appear to be blue to the one wearing blue glasses.
Thank you. Okay, comments on that?
Well, the thought that matter is not something external to us means if it's not external, then it's internal, and it's just a viewing what is really present wrongly, the spirit, heaven and earth, right? And so that's really, it's difficult sometimes, but that's really all we're seeing is spirit turned upside down. But it's all handled within thought. It's nothing outside of us. And I've been learning that since coming here, and it's really changed a lot of things for me.
Thank you.
Could I say something?
Yes.
I'm working a lot with the idea of eyes, and I'm very grateful that we had from the Blue Book the reading about eyes. And so, of course, this idea of discernment is very important, that we are connected to God in our growth and our development. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, I also was thinking about eyes and understanding, and how Elijah said, please, God, open my servant's eyes to see what really is present here. And it's just a great prayer for us every day to, you know, open our eyes and show us the reality, show us the real man that God has made.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, because the seeing things incorrectly can lead people to do the strangest things. I mean, I've known in the past so-called Christian scientists who believe that since matter's unreal, they can totally ignore their bodies and not take care of themselves. Because after all, it's matter and it's not real. It leads people to weird, destructive conclusions unnecessarily. The idea that when you view something, if you see it as material, you're just viewing it incorrectly. But that doesn't mean you don't love it, you don't thank God for it, and you don't take care of it.
Yeah.
Thank you. When I had trouble with this, Florence, did you want to speak?
No, I was just speaking to what Gary just mentioned, because what we once had I think she said she was a practitioner, totally, you know, disheveled. I mean, and from that point of view, you know, it's not seeing yourself, okay, matter doesn't matter. So I think she wasn't taking care. I don't know what her state of mind was, obviously not good. So she wasn't taking care of herself, and that's not right. I mean, we have a body. This body has to be viewed correctly. And in thinking, viewing it correctly means thinking of it correctly. After all, Mrs. Eddy has given us the definitions of man, and she says it's an embodiment of right ideas. We have to think or see ourselves that way. But it means taking care of yourself, not just ignoring it, but being grateful for it and taking care of it, cherishing it, you know, but viewing it correctly at all times.
Thank you.
And that is one thing that I have really loved about Christian Science always, is that it doesn't deny that we are here and that the body, you know, there's so many strange things that say about this and that, but Christian Science is always very clear. And I know more than six wonderful articles titled The Absolute and the Relative, and that's what it explains, you know, that in the absolute, yes, all this is true, but we have to take care of the relative because we're right here, right now. And that's obedience too, to God.
Thank you, Ingrid. Yes. When I had difficulty understanding. Who's talking?
Also, I've heard that being neat in your appearance and clean and attractive is a gift to others as well as yourself.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
If you're appreciating something, if you appreciate it, you take care of it.
Well, and if you see yourself as the image and likeness of God, which is the source of all beauty, the source of all wisdom, you want to present yourself as the image and likeness of God. You don't want to turn people off.
Well, you eliminate temptation to, on their part, to malpractice.
Very true.
You're presenting a very poor picture. That's not
very true, and a very poor picture of Christian Science.
Mm-hmm. And how do you glorify God with that kind of image?
And to recognize you are the temple of the living God. In Martha Wilcox's book, Scientific Translations, that was very helpful to me when I couldn't quite get the right concept of matter. And then she says, not a single blade of grass, a leaf, or a flower is material when viewed correctly. It is spirit mind which conceives, outlines, and forms these ideas, which multiply and replenish the earth. Mrs. Eddy says in Science and Health, by its own volition, not a blade of grass springs up, not a spray buds within the veil, not a leaf unfolds its fair outlines, not a flower starts from its cloistered cell. all natural beauty and grandeur, that was the end of the quote, and then all natural beauty and grandeur from the freshness of the morning to the calm of the evening and the starry heavens at night are the presence of the one spirit and are therefore spiritual. All natural activities such as eating and walking and resting and hearing and seeing and thinking and feeling are not in nor of matter, but are the conscious functionings of the one spirit and are therefore spiritual. All natural love and affection and gladness and happiness and joy and peace and harmony are not in nor of person, but are the one conscious life or spirit in being and are therefore spiritual and unceasing. All things pertaining to and essential to our normal state of living, from a pin to a palace, when rightly viewed, are not matter, but are spiritual ideas at hand. And this is what helps, aids you to see what is really going on and to see the kingdom of heaven on earth here and now. This ability of seeing past the material picture to the God being that is actually being expressed. And if it doesn't seem to be expressed, as someone said earlier, it's just something turned upside down. Our focus is off kilter. And we have to get our focus right. Take off the blue glasses, as the Watching Point said. Florence, do you have the second part of your prayer available to read again?
The scientific prayer?
The one you read this morning.
The Christian Scientist prayer, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm.
There is no matter and no mortal mind. God is all in all. All is harmony, health, holiness. This is the prayer unceasing to be used on all occasions and at all times. It lays the axe at the root of unreality, materiality, that forbidden tree, and cuts it down. Preserve a sacred silence on the subject of prayer. And she signed it. Author of Science and Health.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. This is our daily task. And when you're seeing it, you see your heart's going to well up with gratitude for God. When you're going around seeing the material conditions and picture, you're going to feel miserable. But when you're seeing God behind all things and knowing this is the truth of his creation, you will be welling up with joy and gratitude. You can't help it. I know. I've tried both. And the second is much better to live your life.
Most definitely.
And it will bring heaven on earth. It does bring heaven on earth when you see it. Might be Martha Wilcox, or maybe it's Mrs. Eddy, but just saying about we must view everything with the utmost tenderness.
Yeah.
With great love. Florence?
No, I was just thinking what's also been helpful is to think that, you know, when we're given perfect God, perfect man, means perfection is what God has created, and he maintains and sustains it. So that's what is existent all the time, unchanging. So when we see the, you know, the material turmoil and this and this and that, that is the counterfeit. That is the opposite, that we are not, we should stand guard at the portal of our door, not to take it in, you know, because otherwise, well, is God not maintaining his universe then? I mean, did he just create it and leave it? No. So the point of perfection is always existent, and therefore not to accept the counterfeit or the lies that come.
Yes, thank you. And, you know, the more that you do this, the more you will bring heaven on earth. Because right thought, and Mrs. Eddy says this, right thought must manifest itself. Now, this isn't human will, and it's not wishful thinking. This is applying the laws and rules of the universe into your life. And when you back it up with God and moral living and, you know, obeying the Ten Commandments and the Sermon on the Mount and all of that, this is an expression of heaven on earth and God on earth. It's not New Age, which just is a, you know, what do they call
mesmerizing.
Yeah, mesmerizing. Mm-hmm. It's the truth of being brought into your life. God's creation.
This is, and this is what heals, isn't it? This is how Jesus healed. I mean, all these people with supposed problems came to him, and he said, no, that's not what's real.
That's right.
He demanded that they experience what is real about them.
He held the signs of perfect man.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Tony?
Yeah, I was just trying to go back to the conversation with matter is just like a misstatement. And I think it makes more sense when you're talking with people not to turn them off. You know, like, we're trying to help people, and it makes much more sense to people to understand that we're just seeing things improperly, that we just need to, kind of like we were saying, change your glasses out. In other words, to go around just saying, you know, there's no matter, that's confusing. And that makes people think you're really weird, because the material world, so-called, is incredibly complex, and it's woven together in such a way that does prove, if you will, the existence of God, the infinite intelligence behind everything. And then to say this doesn't exist is not going to help advance, you know, people into seeing, well, what is real is spirit, and we're misseeing it, in other words.
And that is why it is not wise to talk Christian Science. You live it, and then when people are ready, they will ask you about it. But we certainly don't. I mean, Mrs. Eddy has stated somewhere that the idea that matter is unreal is one of the last things that people will ever understand in Christian Science. And it's one of the most challenging truths.
Yes.
People to accept.
And when you
I'm glad you said that. Yeah.
When you do it without giving thought, this is what we call the Christian Science jargon, and people, and please, in testimonies, you don't, when you think of a testimony, think, would a new person understand what the heck I'm saying? Don't start talking about beliefs and yeah, there is no matter and things that are way beyond, what a person would understand, and actually what you yourself understands. Mrs. Eddy once said, don't say those things until you can prove them. If you can prove there is no matter, then maybe you can say it. But
Prove it first.
Well, yeah, well, a lot of times she says you shouldn't even have audible prayer, because you get way out ahead of yourself. Oftentimes when I'm leading, like I'm leading a group or something, I'll ask everyone, let's just do a silent prayer. That way everyone can kind of meet it where they're at. You
know? Right. Mrs. Evans used to comment on that, when people could talk a good game and then they were way beyond what they were. And she said they would be mesmerized by their own, and I won't say the word, but it's BS. She would say the word. They're mesmerized by their own talk. And they would think they know more than they do. So we must be careful of that and not speak beyond what we can prove and what we know. It's most important. All of this is most important. And Mrs. Eddy would not have Christian Science spoken at her dinner table or her breakfast table or any. They were to talk not about Christian Science, because there's another case where you just start talking about it. It's the living it that's important.
You know that famous quote, you have it as you live it.
Yes. Thank you.
Right.
Linda?
I was just going to go real quickly back to the New Age, because when I think about it, it's really human thinking, looking at matter and trying to make it better, more lovely, more fluent or whatever you're wanting. And it's very, very different. But the worst part of it is cloaked in words that are taken from spiritual works.
Kind of
is hidden, and they think it's spirituality when it's just really.
But it's human will.
Human will.
Yeah, and really, I'm pretty sure of it now that all New Age did stem from Christian Science.
Yes.
Watered down, adulterated.
Right.
Yes.
And so we must, that's why I insist we get back to the pure science, Mrs. Eddy's works and the early workers, because only there will you find the truth. In a poem by Max Dunaway, he says, "Not what we do or say, but what we think determines what we are. Within the realm of high and noble thought soars mankind's highest star. There is no deed of valor, might, or right without the thought behind. No work of love was ever wrought or taught, but started in the mind. No king, dictator, or president defines what thoughts we choose to think. No prison bars can hold or stay the thought that is with God a link. Would you rule over all that life can bring? Be joyous, strong, and free? Guard then the thoughts of every hour, for these are life and destiny." So you can ask yourself when you're thinking a thought, do I want to see this thought made manifest? And if you don't, you better cut it out. That standing porter at the door of thought. So ask yourself, do I want to see this thought I've been thinking, maybe thinking a lot? Do I want to see that happen? Then stop it. Whole thought to the enduring, the good, and the true. And we don't have to, you know, plan or outpicture anything. We have the present right now to deal with. What are you thinking now? What are you doing now? And that is what we must focus on, the present. Now, to go back to, I think it was Elizabeth talking about the lesson, in the lesson, the story of Elisha. Such a beautiful story. It's really one of my favorites. You know, here it just seemed like what all hell was breaking loose, and the servant was so upset and concerned. And so what did Elisha do?
He prayed
not in
the servant's eyes.
And what was actually there?
Chariots
of angels right there. Now, he didn't, and I found this, and I did write an article about it because it struck me, called Open His Eyes that He May See. He didn't tell the servant, hey, no, you're not seeing what is actually there. You know, listen to me. This is what's actually there, okay? Maybe you can't see it. Maybe someday you'll see it, but you can't see it, but it's there. I see it. No, he didn't do that. And how often when we have someone close to us, or maybe not that close, I wish they would get this. I wish they would understand that. And what should the prayer be? Not that you're going to go be their savior and tell them what they need to see, but what?
Pray that God will open the eyes, awaken them.
Thank you. And guess what? He will. He's the creator of all. And to have God tell them is so much more effective than if you're trying to push them around.
Yeah, I had to learn the hard way. I can't change anybody's mind. Only God can do that.
Only God can do that. Remember, and Vic Del Young says, you know, if you want to help somebody, don't. And what does that mean? That means don't get in the middle of the way and start being the traffic cop. You know. Let them learn.
Well, God's already in the midst of giving everyone the lessons they need and teaching them what they need. So unless God is directing you to do something specific in a situation, you're just getting in the way.
Well, and that's it. And that's what it mainly boils down to. What maybe there are instances when you can tell someone something. It's always different. It is what God is telling you to do at the time. But it's a good example of Elisha letting God work. And when he did, the servant did see. And we can pray for all mankind to open their eyes and see, right? Yes. Right now, yeah. The world is ready for Christian Science, Mrs. Eddy says.
And that's why we have community watches 3 times a week.
Yeah.
That's the purpose.
And their thinking will dictate what their life experience is. And if it's not good, you know, they'll feel it and know it. And hopefully we have an example for them to come to.
Thank you.
Yes.
You know, as a parent, the best thing you can do is be a good example. And as your children get older, you can't be with them all the time, right? You can't be with them all the time. So you have to know that they are governed by God. Mrs. Eddy says they're obedient to the mind that made them and that they will hear God's voice and do what's right. And in knowing that, you would be surprised at the wonderful results of that, rather than to stay home and be, you know, wringing your hands and worried and they didn't call me in the last hour, what's happened? Just know this truth. That's the being careful for nothing, but in everything, thanking and praising God in thanksgiving to him. It's the best way you can help anyone is know they are governed by God. Now, also in that story about Elisha, Carrie sent me a good article called Protection. And I remember the first time Mrs. Evans taught this lesson to us in class, because it was like a duh moment, you know, like, yeah, how did I miss that one? But he writes, his name is William Adams, when we speak of protection, we do not imply the actual existence of some harmful thing to be guarded against. The realization of absolute protection involves the understanding of God and his true likeness, spiritual man. And this includes the understanding that there is no reality to matter. Mortals entertain a material sense of existence, which is accompanied by a sense of fear, and so we feel the need of protection. But God dwells forever in the light which no shadow of evil penetrates. Likewise, the child of God, in the clear realization of his true spiritual selfhood, knows that no harm can come to him, because the dwelling place is forever in spirit, where evil matter is unknown. Now, you see here, this again, as someone mentioned the relative, I mean, it was Ingrid, the absolute and the relative. The absolute is, there's protection implies, you know, there's something out there that you have to be protected from. Now, if you know the absolute is, which, you know, is true in the relative, but the absolute is that all is infinite mind and it's infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. So in truth, there's nothing to fear and there's nothing that you need protecting from. Do you understand that?
Yeah.
Good. Good. It will make a big difference. Because, you know, you're walking down the street and you see somebody, oh, goodness, he looks like I'm going to get knocked over in the head. Well, and so maybe then you start saying the 91st Psalm. Instead of saying that right there is a child of God and I'm going to love him and he's going to love me because that's all God made, right?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And you would be surprised at the results.
It doesn't mean that you walk foolishly down, you know, dark alleys in the, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning. I mean,
so be daring God, aren't you?
Thank you.
Exactly.
Yes. Shall not tempt the Lord thy God.
Mrs. Eddy even has a book or something where she was talking to a student when they had trouble with worrying about someone breaking into the her house at the time. And she asked her, and to some degree, I think it was, she said, you do pray for protection. And then the student said, and then I would lock the door. And she said, yes.
Yes, you do the practical thing. Right. Thank you. Because this is what Gary was talking about earlier, where where you wouldn't take care of your body, or because there's no matter. So you don't lock your doors and you roam around streets in the middle of the night and do foolish things. That's not what we're talking about here at all. So thank
that's
you.
That's not wisdom.
That's not wisdom. No, that is not wisdom. So you do the wise thing.
It's not love, because you put yourself into tempt somebody else.
I remember
the teacher said, don't leave your windows down to tempt somebody to break in your car. If you're in a place where they could be conspicuous, they could not be seen.
Thank you.
Yeah, and ultimately, it's not obedience. I mean, if God directs you to do something, then you do it. But if God doesn't direct you to do something, but you get a whim that you want to do something because it's in whatever.
Or you feel entitled because you've studied Christian Science for so long and you should be just fine because of it.
Yes. Yep. And you know, Mrs. Evans used to like to give the example of someone who'd been sick with a stomach flu and then wanted to have corned beef and cabbage the next day. I mean, that's just nonsensical. You use, as someone said, wisdom, you know, use where very Christian Science stands for common sense. And so, but you will be surprised if you were ever anywhere and you get the feeling you need to pray about the situation and you're knowing that God is at all and everywhere. By knowing that, you will also know if something is wrong. You will feel it.
Yeah.
And you will be able to
protect yourself from it.
Mm-hmm. And others too. Yes, handle it. There are a lot of different things that might come to you. Just praying about it might do it. Or you might have to go talk to somebody and say, I have a bad feeling about this, and please pay attention, or something, a policeman or something. You will know what you need to know because God is all-knowing. So if there's something wrong, you will know that. And that is why the importance of the praying without ceasing and not letting your guard down ever. So there is a place for the relative and there's a place for the absolute. And I certainly love the 91st Psalm and I work with it every day. And with that, I'm knowing the allness of the Father. And then also you will be alerted if there's something that's not right and how to take care of that situation. It's wonderful because Christian Science is so complete. Someone was writing not about Christian Science, but about God and the universe. They were saying it's self-correcting. And you think about that, and you know, when you make mistakes or do things wrong, God doesn't punish you, but it is self-correcting, because won't it come to you that you will get a little smack in the face somehow and say, no, you're not doing the right thing. Someone likened it also to a GPS system. So you're going along and you make the wrong turn and the voice says, whoops, no, wrong turn. Yeah. So it recalibrates. And it said, okay, you missed that turn. Okay, so the next turn, you can make the next turn. Okay, hear me, listen, make the next turn. Hopefully you do. And so it is with our Father. He's always talking to us, telling us what to do and how to do it. And if we do make a mistake, he will
recalibrate,
yes, and tell you the next turn and get you back on the right path. So
that wonderful article by, I believe, Adam Dickey, read by Karen, God's Law of Adjustment, talks about all that, how things are just adjusted to God's harmony.
Yes,
beautiful article.
It is. It really is. It's a beautiful article. We have so many good articles to study. That's why there's no need for, I certainly feel that, to go elsewhere looking for other things to read and study. I mean, if they're helpful to you, fine. But we've got a wealth of material here that's wonderful. So, all right. On the bulletin board, I guess, Debbie was saying how wonderful she felt being connected to God. But then she asked, how do you recognize when that your thoughts need to be lifted? And how then do you rouse your thoughts from sense to soul? And then she says how well it was answered in that article on our website that Carrie had given it to us a while ago about arise and shine, right? So
yes, absolutely.
Yes. Thank you, Debbie. It does. And that's good that you don't, that you know, if you feel like you're getting groggy or you've made that wrong turn, that you're aware that you're somehow in a fog and you need to get back to the light of truth. And two things in that article particularly tell you how to wake yourself up. Does anyone know or remember? Well, one is light. The light. You think of a child in bed in the morning, you pull the blinds up and the light comes in. And then the next thing is the word, the voice. Wakey, wakey, time to get up. Those two things, the light, which is you obtain. How do you get the light?
Through prayer and listening.
Yes.
Gratitude.
Prayer. Yes.
Open your textbook.
Yes. Read. Yes. Light of the textbook in the Bible. Open that up. If you're really in a fog, get back to your books. And then the voice.
Humility
always, yes. And then the voice of the word. But then you got to do it. You got to know it's a command. Get up, go, get going, do it. Don't just sit there dreamily and think about it. It's very important because arising and awaking, you're awaking yourself up from what?
Adam dream. That's as mere lies.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. The Adam dream and its lies.
Mesmerism.
Yes.
And so easy to get sucked in by the world events.
Yes.
Yes, I was going to say how important it has become even more every day to me to be so aware that about this prayer and study time. I know we know that, but I'm just saying even more aware of how I'm coming from work and I said, and the only thing I'm going to do is go home and I'm going to study this chapter or whatever it is. And when I realize it's like an hour later and I've been doing this and that, maybe even the thought comes to go and do something. And then I come back to, wait a minute, divine mind said, when you get home, you do this.
Yeah, thank you. Right. It's so true. Thank you.
Right.
And what does Mrs. Eddy say? How many hours a day should you spend in prayer, communion, and study with God?
Four.
Yeah. Okay. Remember that. Four.
Thank you.
So we can all do better there, I'm sure. And you get so bombarded with the news, and the news is telling you all about the Adam dream, and it is out to mesmerize you. I was reading just kind of briefly an article. I'm going to study it a little more later, but it was saying, if anything you read or take in or see makes you feel depressed, upset, anxious, then stop. Don't do it.
Yeah.
That's an indication maybe you shouldn't be doing this.
Well, if you're going to watch the news, you should open it up knowing I'm just going to find things to pray and watch about, not,
that is true.
Not to believe.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. That is the whole key, because we have to know what's going on, what is it it's claiming to be saying and doing, but only to heal it. In our own thinking is all we can do, but we've got to do it. If enough of us do it, or even one with God as a majority, it will change the outward picture.
And Mrs. Eddy instructs us never to enter an immoral atmosphere unless what?
You have to purify
in order to heal it.
Exactly.
Or purify it.
That's attempt to purify it.
Yes. So, and remember.
And Mrs. Eddy.
All of the news stations have an economic incentive to show you only the bad things that are going on in the world.
Yes.
They make more money Amen. Selling bad news than good news.
Yeah.
Amen. So
you will not be mesmerized. And if you find yourself getting mesmerized, that's what Debbie was saying. You know, let's get back on it. Get to your books. Awake yourself. Arise. Let the light in and let the voice of truth command your thought to awaken you to the real truth of God's creation. Now, Chardell, what did you bring?
Well, I was thinking about reason, revelation, and realization. And then I found this on our website, Quiet Realization by Bicknell Young. Shall I read it? Mm-hmm. A practitioner of Christian Science has some time or some hour in which he says or realizes the truth. He gets a time which he calls a quiet time. He enters into a closet, so to speak, where the material senses are shut out, and there science is expressed, and being educated in science, educating himself hourly, persistently, he gains what he calls a realization on behalf of someone, himself, or the world. In the realm of thought, there comes to him clearly some ideas such as I have mentioned before. God is mind, God is love, God is soul, God is spirit, God is infinite principle, and God is life, that's science and health. These are ideas, and sometimes these ideas come so clearly that there is no other consciousness. And then the suggestion comes that someone is sick or some such belief, and immediately to that consciousness, the tangibility of those ideas is so real that the individual gets well, because the infinite presence becomes the actual law to the occasion.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Quiet realization. You know, this, I have been talking about in past roundtables, the virtue medicine. And so far we've covered gratitude, courage, forgiveness, awe, honesty, joy and laughter, generosity and charity, love, optimism, hope, the healing of resentment, beauty, humility, patience. And then the more recent one is called silence, virtue medicine. And I compare that to when Mrs. Eddy says in Miscellaneous Writings, God's preparations of the sick are potions of his own qualities. So all of that list I gave you were God's qualities to express, and that's his preparations for the sick. It's healing when you express these qualities. And the word virtue is strength, moral goodness, the practice of moral duties, and the abstaining from vice, the practice of sincere love of God and his laws. And then virtue is nothing but voluntary obedience to the truth. So in the virtue of silence, it said an experiment was done, and in it had all these different kinds of music playing. The reason for the experiment was to see maybe what kind of music brought peace to people, right? So there were all different kinds of music played. And between each type of music played, there was 2 minutes of silence. So when they ran this test, the guy was really surprised to find, guess what brought the most healing and regeneration to the body?
The silence.
The silence. He said it even surpassed Brahms and Beethoven. Just the quiet. In today's world, how much do we need that?
Oh,
and you will find, even when you are working to be quiet, the noises in your head and all the events of the day or the news, or, you know, it's hard to switch all that off. You have to practice. In Collectania, Mrs. Eddy says, study to be quiet,
yeah,
which I found fascinating. And then she quotes Isaiah in returning in rest and in confidence.
Quiet and confidence.
Yeah. Quiet and confidence. She'll be your peace or something. Strength. Thank you. I should look it up, get it exactly. But anyway, the point, study to be quiet. I thought, well, that is a weird thing, study to be quiet. But honestly, you have to put some effort into it. And in this study, the silence brought blood pressure went down, all of these things that seemed to plague mankind helped by just the quietness. So along with that, it goes with the 4 hours of prayer and study each day. Study to be quiet. Really work on being silent and listening. And in Florence's reading today, the prayer, she talks about preserve a sacred silence. Didn't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Florence read, preserve a sacred silence on this matter.
Yes.
Be quiet about it. Listen. Get that quietness every day. I hope you all have your little places in your home in which to be quiet. Everyone needs a little place, some little place in which you have absolute quiet if you need it. So.
There are people, I even have friends who keep their television on 24 hours a day, even when they're going to sleep. Background noise. They just, they're uncomfortable without, they can't stand the total quiet. Well, it's just a sign of the great need for God and the ability to listen to God, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And everybody now with these, I don't know, earplugs in their ears. And I mean, sometimes it's good. You can be listening to good things, I know, and that's helpful. But sometimes to just be quiet, or if you go for a walk, just enjoy nature or
yes,
or the sounds of the city, if that's where you are. But just don't be constantly.
Well, and, you know, it's simple because you can't fill a vessel that's already full, right?
No.
And consciousness that is listening to something other than God drowns out the voice of God. So choose what you want to listen to.
And you know, a lot of times people are afraid, they don't want to be quiet. That's why they have TV on all the time. They don't want to hear that voice. Maybe
it's a rebuke to them.
Sometimes it could be. You must have that quiet to stay in touch with your Father and hear what he's telling you. Listen. It's a time of silence isn't a time for you to be talking. It's a time to be quiet and listen. And in those moments, wonderful things will come to you, as well as self-correcting things. That's why they say the early morning when you first wake up, you know, your thought is quiet and you can hear things you maybe wouldn't hear. Sometimes happens before you fall asleep too. So treasure and cherish those times, the sound of silence.
Mm-hmm.
As Simon and Garfunkel.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I said I was going to read now this article Carrie sent on Mrs. Eddy, the woman. Last week I read about her appearance. This week is about her teachings. It was the present writer's good fortune to receive Mrs. Eddy's personal instruction. And in those class days, sitting at Mrs. Eddy's feet, it was not difficult to believe what is recorded in the Bible of those who were divinely guided in the olden time. For with a rare spiritual genius, she lifted her students' thoughts to the heights of inspiration, and never was their credulity taxed by the inconsistent statement that what was once true is no longer true. No, it was unchanging God and unchanging law. the light growing clearer as men drew nearer to the ineffable presence, nearer to truth and love. It is not possible to speak of Mrs. Eddy without referring to the subject of religion, because she is by nature religious in a most essential and vital sense. Yet there is in her character an entire absence of that sanctimoniousness which is often mistaken for spirituality. Sometimes in her teaching, she would turn a flash of playful raillery upon some materialistic dogma, only to leave the truth which it parried more sacred to her listeners when it was stripped of the trappings of mere belief. The keenness of her intuition made her quick to detect insincerity, but there was an indescribable something in her analysis of her students' answers which made them, when in her presence at least, desire to be, not to be seen, not merely to seem. To her, real things were real, sacred things sacred, and shams merely the shadows which would vanish before the light of truth. Her acquaintance with the Bible was unique in its character. Some passage involving a deep mortal question, which had escaped the notice of learned commenters, would be explained by her in response to a student's question, in a never-to-be-forgotten way, the spirit which giveth life being her, the all-important consideration. The spirit which giveth life, that's what she projected. That is why any intellectuality or anything else is not good in Christian Science. It's called the bane of Christian Science, because it has to be the spirit which giveth life, which impels you to do better, to be better, to make your day better by following the Christ. As Matthew said in The Chosen, but I have one thing to do today, and that's to follow the Christ, to follow Jesus. So all you have to do in any given day is just that. And so we should. All right, we will conclude now with miscellaneous writings, questions and answers.
860. Mrs. Eddy writes, question, if mortal mind and body are myths, what is the connection between them and real identity? And why are there as many identities as mortal bodies? Her answer, evil in the beginning claimed the power, wisdom, and utility of good. And every creation or idea of spirit has its counterfeit in some matter belief. Every material belief hints the existence of spiritual reality. And if mortals are instructed in spiritual things, it will be seen that material belief, in all its manifestations, reversed, will be found the type and representative of verities priceless, eternal, and just at hand. The education of the future will be instruction in spiritual science against the material, symbolic, counterfeit sciences. All the knowledge and vain strivings of mortal mind that lead to death, even when aping the wisdom and magnitude of immortal mind, will be swallowed up by the reality and omnipotence of truth over error and of life over death. Mary Baker Eddy.
Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.